Welcome to Orioles on the Birds. This is Zach Spedden, joined as always by Bob Phelan. Our co-host Nick Stevens is out this week. So Bob and I will be breaking down the first week of Orioles action at the Major League level, where things have been very busy and very exciting as the ownership group led by David Rubenstein officially took control of the club last week, right before the Orioles won 4 out of 6 in their opening homestand. We're also going to look at the opening week of the Norfolk Tides, who are hitting the cover off the baseball right now down the International League. But first, as we like to do at the beginning of every episode, we want to welcome some new members to our Patreon community. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Bob.
Yeah, seems like there's a few people that are as excited about the start of the baseball season as we are. So I want to shout out Cody, James, and Serena. Thank you guys so much for joining up for the Patreon. Hopefully you enjoy the content and it's worth your while, and we really appreciate your support.
And as a reminder, you can join our Patreon community as a paying member for as little as $3 a month. At the $5 and $10 levels, you'll have access to bonus daily coverage, which is underway as the 2024 minor league season has begun. And in our episode later this week, we're going to look at the Bay Sox, Ironbirds, and Shorebirds break camp rosters. But in this episode, we're going to focus primarily on the major leagues and AAA. And we're going to start with the major leagues, as last week was very exciting in Birdland. On Wednesday, David Rubenstein and his ownership group, which includes Cal Ripken Jr., among others, took control of the team. The Orioles responded the following day with an 11-3 win on opening day over the Los Angeles Angels behind a dominant performance from their new ace, Corbin Burnes. They would come back on Saturday and defeat the Angels 13-4 to clinch the series. That would be followed by a 3-game series against the Royals to start this week, which saw the Orioles also take 2 out of 3, albeit in completely different ways. They really did not dominate the Royals by any stretch of the imagination, but in the end, pulled off 2 walk-off wins, including Jordan Westberg's walk-off home run on Monday night, and then James McCann getting the base hit to bring the Orioles back from behind to defeat Kansas City on Wednesday. The Orioles are heading to Pittsburgh on Friday to face the Pirates in their home opener, and their record sits at 4-2. So, Bob, it's been a really interesting and exciting week here in Birdland. What are your thoughts on all of this?
It's so good. It's been so nice to have baseball back in general, have the Orioles just dominate, just good news after good news. And like I said, we might have should have been swept by the Royals. I mean, it took a walk-off home run by Jordan Westberg and then a big come-from-behind victory on Wednesday in a game that we really had no right on winning, but we ended up doing it anyway. Thank you, Royals, for having Will Smith as your closer and sticking with him. Yeah, I mean, if a team is going to win series like that when they were playing probably as bad as they're going to play all year, even Corbin Burnes only struck out 3 batters, gave up 9 hits. Like, he just really grinded and battled his way through that start on Wednesday after the 5-hour rain delay. That's what great teams do. And that was fun to see. They dominated the Angels, the Tides. Reinforcements are right there if we need them. And, you know, Tony Kemp, Ramon Urias, Austin Hayes, don't get too comfortable on the major league roster. Not off to the greatest starts, but, yeah, the guys are coming right behind them. It was a ton of fun. The Rubenstein stuff was great. I loved everything him and his partners were doing and saying. So far, so good. So, yeah, everything's looking up in Birdland, I'd say.
Let's dive a little bit deeper into Burnes, the Orioles' prize acquisition this past offseason. And as you mentioned, his start against Kansas City on Wednesday was not his best. Labored a little bit after a 5-hour rain delay. Managed to get through it, but still only 3 strikeouts over 5 innings of work. That said, Burnes so far through his first 11 2/3 innings pitch as an Oriole has struck out 14 batters, 11 of them in that start against the Angels, while walking just 3. He has given up 10 hits in that span, 9 of them coming against Kansas City. So Burnes, I think what we're seeing, even in that start on Wednesday night, is that he can be a difference maker at the top of this rotation. How do you feel about how he's going to perform the rest of the way?
I am very, very happy with him at anchoring this rotation. I think, yeah, you saw the best of Burnes on opening day, and then you saw not the worst, I'm sure, but just like the not the best stuff, not the finest command last time out, and both were good and both led to Orioles wins. I think if it wasn't opening day and limited to 85-ish pitches, he might have gone seven, who knows, maybe eight innings if that game is in the middle of the season towards the end of the year. In a must-win game, I think he goes another inning or two and continues to dominate. But yeah, I think he's a great anchor for the rotation. Like I said, Grayson came right behind him and was lights out in his first start of the year as well. He should be pitching tomorrow night against Pirates, him and Jared Jones. That'll be a fun pitching matchup tomorrow, late afternoon, actually, 4 o'clock, Pirates home opener tomorrow. It'll be interesting to see if Bradish can get back like they expect him to in this first half here. Then to have those three, like we talked about in the offseason, I think that's going to be as good as any teams out there could offer right now, especially with all the pitching injuries across the league. The Orioles might have just by the skin of their teeth avoided a devastating one with Bradish. We'll see. Knock on wood. But hey, the Marlins are losing. Maybe we trade for Jesus Luzardo at some point too and just continue to build this rotation. But I think, you know, Kramer, Wells, and Irvin obviously were not Rodriguez and Burns, but I thought they held their own except for Irvin. I think he'll be better as a long man, but it's one start, one time through the rotation. It's hard to take too much away from it, but I'm pretty pleased with where we are.
Yeah, Wells in that start against the Angels on Sunday came out of the gate slow, but looked really good over his final few innings. And if the bats had been anywhere near where they had been on Saturday, that would have been an easy win for the Orioles, and they would have closed out the sweep. But that was not meant to be. Let's turn our attention over to the hitters now. And I just have to say the one thing that has really jumped out to me so far is the performance of Ryan Mountcastle. Hit some balls really hard. He had a few tough luck base hits that could have been home runs in a lot of ballparks in that first homestand. Blame the wall, blame the cold weather for a few of those games, especially against Kansas City. Damp air, the ball just is not going to travel out to left field. Despite that, though, Mountcastle comes out of the homestand so far with a 300 average over just 20 at-bats. But the thing that jumps out to me, 4 walks against 3 strikeouts. And overall, just a much better plate approach than what we've seen from him in the past.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've seen stretches for Mountcastle, I feel like, where he's walking more, striking out less. And actually, I feel like he's struck out less every year that he's been in the majors. And his walk rate might have been slowly going up as well. But it seems like a flip has been switched, because usually he starts off like super free swinging in the beginning of the year, and then he'll kind of start walking more as the year goes on. At least that's how it's gone in the past. But it seems like he's made like an Anthony Santander type of improvement when it comes to swing decisions, at least over the first week of the year. And hopefully that's the case, because we've always known he can hit the ball inconsistently. So if he's going to stop flailing at the low and away breaking balls, the league could be in trouble, and Mountcastle might be another dangerous weapon. Maybe the young guys coming up like Kerstad and even Basayo, even lower, these guys that could take some time away from him at first base, or maybe just the fact that he had that vertigo and was like, look, I can't take this for granted. I've got to really step up my game. If that's what led to it, then, man, he could be a big time force in the middle of this lineup, and in a lineup that need a little more home run power than they had last year. I mean, I don't know if we need anything more than a 101 win team, but I think that was one of the things that was missing a little bit, was that like 30 home run power.
Yeah, I agree. You were kind of looking to Henderson, especially in the second half of last year, and Santander as your home run guys throughout the season last year. And it felt like the other hitters were capable of putting up a good at bat, getting the extra base hit time in and time out, just not necessarily delivering that home run power. So if Mountcastle could give the Orioles another hitter who has that ability this year, that would be big.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, Santander, he's another guy that could put up 30 bombs. And Henderson, I mean, he's looking like a potential MVP candidate across the diamond. He's hitting the ball as hard as ever consistently. He's had a little bit of bad luck with his batted ball, as has Adley Rutschman, who Adley hasn't even struck out this year so far through six games. That's nice to see. But Gunner making amazing plays at shortstop on defense, hitting home runs, and just hitting the ball hard consistently and having good at-bats, batting leadoff. You love to see it. And I think the lineup's only going to improve as the year goes on. I mean, Kowser should start getting more playing time. He's off to a great start with the bat. He looked great in left field in the one game he started, making plays look easy that I think Austin Hayes might have made, but I don't think he would have made them look quite as easy as Kowser did chasing him down. I think he's batting like 500, 448 to start the year, something like that. So, yeah, I think Ramon Arias and Austin Hayes are the guys, unfortunately for them, those are the guys that everyone's like been not wanting around as much, even though they're solid players. Unfortunately for them, they're the guys off to the slowest starts. So that only just makes everything even worse as far as the fan backlash. But I think when all is said and done, this is an offense that's probably going to score 4 or 5 runs a game on average. And that should be good enough to win another 90 plus games. And I think the offense is only going to get better, as we'll talk about later in this episode, when certain guys come up and push other guys out of the way.
If you're looking at the first six games, which is just that, six games, I don't want to read too much into it, but has there been anything you've seen to this point, maybe with the team as a whole or with a few players, that's concerning to you?
Austin Hayes, I know he came into spring and he had lost some weight, I think. And I think it was intentional. I think he said he wanted to slim down a little bit. To me, he just looks slow, like even slower than he did last year. He's just crushing the ball into the ground, which is not a recipe for success. To me, I don't know how long I'm sure he'll end up hitting like 250 with a 750 OPS if he gets regular playing time. I'm not saying that the player that he was through the first six games is who he's going to continue to be, but I'm just not sure how long he's going to be able to hold off a rising Kowser, a Kerstad who's batting like 600 in AAA with 20-some RBIs already in their six games of the season. And I don't know. I think that, to me, and Arias, he's not even been hitting the ball hard so far. Those two guys, unfortunately, I just think at some point room is going to have to be made. And those guys, if it's not a trade, it might have to be an injury or a DFA, at least when it comes to Arias. Those, to me, on the hitting side would be concerning. As far as pitching.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I don't really see too much to be worried about on the pitching side. I feel like the bullpen's pitched pretty well. Jonathan Heasley even looked good in his two innings that he got the other day. Kimbrel gave up the blown save and gave up a run, but really it was a dink of a hit, then two stolen bases, and he could have been a called out at third base. Like, I thought he actually looked pretty good. Really, it's just Cole Irvin and Dean Kramer or Tyler Ells, whichever one doesn't make it, doesn't stick in the rotation once Bradish and Means come back. I think once those guys are pushed to the bullpen, I think it's a pretty complete team, to be honest with you.
What concerned me the most about Kimbrel in his blown save was that he just kept falling behind the count. I think the blown save itself, when you analyze what happened in that inning, like you said, it's a blooper of a base hit that any of Arias, Henderson, or Hayes could have caught. But I think they were just all three a little out of position in that moment. And then you go to a pinch runner who not only is fast enough but bold enough to steal two bases, including third, in that tight spot, and you get the run across. That's not going to happen most nights. Probably not going to happen to Kimbrel again for the rest of the season. I just want to see what his command looks like. And, you know, in fairness to him, this has to be a weird feeling that we're now a week into the season. He's only pitched just once, and the team he's playing for is 4-2. So the Orioles have not had a lot of save situations to this point. In fact, I think his outing was the only one they've had so far in the ninth inning. So we'll see what comes with Kimbrel and with the rest of this Orioles team as the season goes on. But as we mentioned, they are off on Thursday, and then they head to Pittsburgh on Friday afternoon with Grayson Rodriguez getting the ball as they begin their first road trip of the season. Down to AAA level, the Norfolk Tides, your reigning AAA national champions, with a different team, have essentially picked up right where they left off last year. Not only are they winning games, but they're winning games by scoring a lot of runs. And that was best exemplified on Wednesday night when they defeated the Charlotte Knights 26-11. Now, as we're recording this, Charlotte is getting back at them with a 17-6 lead in the top of the eighth on Thursday night. But even if the Tides do lose that game, they'll drop to 4-2 on the season. And what has really jumped out so far has been the offense. And Bob, you touched on it. You brought up a few guys specifically, including Heston Kjerstad. What has stood out to you about the Tides lineup so far?
I was putting some stats on the Discord. Like, if you look at the AAA home run leaders to date, it's like four of the top seven are for the Tides. Here, I'm trying to pull this up real quick. Let's see. The stats I put are the Tides' top five hitters, which is Jackson Holliday, Connor Norby, Kobe Mayo, Heston Kjerstad, and Kyle Stowers are combined. This was through the first two innings of tonight's game. They were batting 449 with 45 runs, 15 doubles, a triple, 15 home runs, and 55 RBI, while the rest of the team, just every other person that has gotten a bat, batting 270 with 22 runs, four doubles, one triple, five home runs, and nine RBIs. So just these top five hitters who are like the guys that are desperate to get to the majors, are major league ready probably in many other organizations right now. They're just banging down the door. Heston Kjerstad might be the hottest start I've ever seen at any level of baseball from the first week of play. I mean, coming into tonight, he was batting 583 with a 1785 OPS, and he's only gone on to have an RBI single and a two-run homer tonight. Kyle Stowers was batting 400 with a 1500 OPS. He had an RBI double in the first inning. Kobe Mayo batting 385 with an OPS over 1,000. Connor Norby 435 with an OPS approaching 1,400. Jackson Holliday batting 400 with an OPS over 1,200 coming into tonight. And they're not having quite the fireworks tonight that they had in the first two games of this series. But, I mean, these guys are saying, look, we're not going to give you any reason other than there's no room, or you want us to reach a certain date or a certain just before you bring us up. We're not going to give you any other excuse like we're struggling. No, it's not going to happen. Not to start the year. Even guys like Peyton Burdick are into it with three home runs, a guy who the Orioles clearly wanted because they traded for him. They tried to sneak him through waivers. He got claimed, and then they picked him back up on waivers. He's been performing, hits the ball really hard. Billy Cook hasn't gotten much playing time, but he's 4-for-8 on the season so far. It's just been a ton of fun to watch, honestly, and I'm really happy for those guys because they deserve some major league time, and if they keep this up, there's going to be no choice but to make room for them.
Yeah, as a correction to what I said earlier, the Tides were only trailing 7-6 at the time we were recording this, so still very much in the game as of when we were talking about it on Thursday night. I think what has stood out so far is that all of these players that you mentioned are taking really quality at bats. You look at the fact that Holliday is still as patient as ever at the plate. Kjerstad and Stowers, I think, are continuing the progression they've had with their swing decisions. And Norby and Mayo showing that as well. So that has really been what has jumped out to me. You think that younger players who are eager to show that they belong in the major leagues, which frankly, some if not all of them do, would be pressing at the plate right now. Maybe being a little overly aggressive. That has not been the case at all.
No, it's like you said, they're taking good at bats. Even if there's not a ton of walks, they're working the count. You can see the swing decisions are there. And I guess the only thing really, the infield defense hasn't been that great so far to date. So if the Orioles want to say, hey, we want you guys to get more comfortable defensively, that might be warranted, at least based off the early errors, and really it's mostly throwing errors and nothing too alarming, but we'll see in a few weeks if that can get tightened up, then there's even less of an excuse to keep them down.
We'll focus on Holiday specifically for a moment, because one of the things that Michael Elias touched on in explaining the Orioles' decision to send him back to AAA was more so the experience, the lack of experience overall at the AAA level, and the lack of experience against high-level left-handed pitching. In his first at-bat of the season at Norfolk, Holiday hit a home run off a left-handed pitcher. That doesn't mean the case is closed, but it shows that the development curve may not be as steep as we think it is. Look, taking into account what he's done at the plate so far and maybe some of the unevenness we've seen in the field, I think would be a fair way to describe it. How long do you think Holiday's actually in AAA? And I know we talked about this last week with Connor Newcomb, but has your opinion changed since then?
Hasn't particularly changed. I think I predicted that he'd be up for the Red Sox series because they have a bunch of right-handed pitchers in the middle of next week. I might lean towards more like a May 1st, right around there, to bring him up, and maybe Mayo, maybe Kerstad, guys like that. I mean, Kerstad's less of a May 1st thing. If they want to get his bat here, or even Norby to replace Attorney Kemp, who I still don't understand why the Orioles signed, I think they could do that sooner rather than later, but May 1st makes the most sense around there. You'll be comfortably over that extra year of service time if that's the game you want to play. So yeah, nothing's really changed other than just I'm not so sure if they're going to rush him up the way I thought they might last week.
I do wonder, because we've seen the Orioles in the past try to stagger out their prospects as much as they can in terms of promotions. We saw that last year with Westberg, Kowser, and Kerstad. Now, keeping in mind that Kerstad has been to the major leagues already, do you think they treat him a little bit different where it's not going to be, okay, we have to bring Heston Kerstad up now, then wait a month and bring up Holiday? Do you think because he's been in the major leagues, they might treat him more the way they treated Stowers last year, which was a need arises, we're going to bring him up and see what he can do?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, they know what he's got. He made the playoff roster last year. Didn't get in a bat, but I mean, they at least trusted him enough and thought highly of him enough that they put him on the playoff roster. He was played pretty well down the stretch last year in his first taste. Clearly didn't have the best spring, but is on fire now. I was calling him the Barrel King on the daily today because that's what he does best. He doesn't necessarily hit the ball as hard as a Kobe Mayo, but he always seems to hit the perfect launch angle with the 95-plus mile per hour exit velocities. And I really think they want to get him more comfortable at first base. I wonder if, let's say, that Kobe Mayo or Jackson Holiday could be tied to a Ramon Urias possible trade early in the season. Maybe Kerstad is tied to a Ryan O'Hearn in a similar fashion because O'Hearn's been playing first base, DH, right field. I feel like that's the same exact thing Kerstad could do. And I think the upside with Kerstad's bat is obviously a little bit higher than Ryan O'Hearn, even though he's performing pretty well so far and last year. So an injury or a trade to Ryan O'Hearn might be what it takes. But if they don't mind, if he's only playing 4 or 5 times a week, 3 to 5 times a week, and they want to have him as another lefty bat off the bench, and Tony Kemp is just not cutting it vibes-wise, I don't know. I feel like he's an option, and Connor Norby's been playing a lot of corner outfield so far this season in the minor leagues. I wonder if that could be the right-handed version if they really want to go that way with a power-hitting bat, impact bat off the bench.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The fact that Norby has been playing right field early on a lot has been interesting because you knew he would have to go somewhere when Jackson Holiday was on second base. But we also know that the one knock on Norby throughout his, really going back to his days at ECU, has been the lack of versatility. He's not a guy you can play at shortstop. He doesn't have the speed to play center field. He doesn't necessarily have the arm for third base, at least according to some accounts. But I think the Orioles are slotting him into the other position on the field where he would make the most sense at the major leagues, because you do have that short right field of Camden Yards where the speed and the arm aren't going to be as much of a concern as they would be for left, which is what you're going to reserve for a guy like Calder, who in the limited sample we've seen so far this season has shown he can cover that space.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued by Norby in right field, actually. And yeah, maybe there is a way they can keep him around, and maybe he's not necessarily just a trade opportunity for the club, because there's a lot of left-handed hitters, Kowser, Kerstad, Holiday, Basayo coming up behind him. You got Mayo and Norby as the big right-handed hitters, and maybe he can be like that Taran Vavra second base slash corner outfield, not center field the way Vavra played a little bit, but a guy with a little more versatility, even if it's only a little bit, then maybe that's enough to get him in the rotation there and at least be an option early in his career.
Go over the pitching staff for the Tides now. And I only bring up McDermott because so far he's the only starter that has had two starts. He pitched the Tides opener and he's pitching tonight as we were recording at Charlotte. And in both of those starts, he struggled a bit with his command. Walk total is a little bit higher than you would like to see from him. Are you concerned about that at all?
Concerned is a strong word. I mean, that's always been his thing. It's earlier in the year. We know bare minimum he's going to be a high leverage reliever just with the stuff that he has. I'll say I'm no more concerned than I was coming into the year just because it's only two starts. Let's see what happens when he just continues to get comfortable. He is in AAA again, working with those robo umps, at least. I don't know if they're doing it full time this year, but I know at least one of his walks when I was watching live in his first start was initially called a strike three, and then on review it was overturned to a walk. It's not super concerned. He's still getting a lot of swings and misses. I think it's just a matter of him continuing to develop and try to pound the zone.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not really worried about it to this point either. I had the chance to do the daily after Norfolk's opener last week. And as I was combing through the pitch data for McDermott, I'm like, you know what? This actually was, in a lot of respects, a good start. Fastball is hitting 95. He's generating a lot of swings and misses. The strikeout totals were decent, but the walks were a little high. And the two things that I think were a little bit different about this year, or at least one thing that's, you know, keep in mind about this year, is that he did have the back injury at the end of last season that cost him, you know, probably two or three starts at the end of the year, maybe, and then had to ramp his way back up to that. And although he looked good in spring training, the short outings that he has there aren't really the best primers for what he's going to have to do in the regular season. And then the other thing is that, to the point of the robo lumps, I have not seen, I don't know if you've seen, how they're developed this year, but I kind of question with something that is still early in its stage of use, whether or not it's consistent from year to year, and if any adjustments that he could have made last year to that strike zone would apply this year. And I don't know. It could be that it's calibrated the same way, and it's working the same way it did last year, but I wouldn't be surprised if something's just a little bit different.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me either. I'm really not sure. Like I said, I'm not even sure if they're still doing the half robo umps, half challenge system. I'm not sure if they're just doing robo umps full time. I'm really not sure. There hasn't been a ton of coverage that I've seen on that. But yeah, I'm still pretty high on McDermott. And Cade Povich, I was talking about his start on the daily this morning. And wow, he was great. Six shutout innings, one hit, no walks, five strikeouts. Like I was saying, though, he would do this last year and then followed up with a bomb of a start where he was inconsistent, good, bad, good, bad. I'm really interested to see how he does Sunday against the same lineup. And if he can put two starts back-to-back, then maybe he's taking the lead back from McDermott. I think it's like a three- or four-horse race for the best pitching prospect in the system. It's going to be fun to track.
Yeah, so far, Povich has had by far the best individual start of any Tides pitcher with his performance against Charlotte on Tuesday night. The thing that I want to see the most from Povich early in the year is keeping the ball in the ballpark. Because that was where he ran into problems last year, was in his bad starts. He'd give up a couple of home runs. I think there was one start early on at Norfolk last summer where he was cruising along and then all of a sudden had a bad inning and gave up a grand slam. And that was early in his Tides tenure. And he had had a few starts like that before at Bowie, not necessarily where he'd give up a grand slam, but he'd string together one or two decent innings, then get into a jam and give up a home run. So even if the walks are a little bit high at the beginning of the year, I'm okay with that as long as I see the home run totals coming down, especially because although the Tides lineup is proving a little bit different right now, this is the time of year where it's generally easy to keep the ball in the ballpark down at Harbor Park.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I felt like the command was on point for Povich in that start. He was able to drop that curveball in for a strike, I want to say 5 or 6 times. So when he's got that going, it's pretty hard to touch him. And on the opposite end of the spectrum was Justin Armbruster's first start, where he couldn't throw his breaking pitches for a strike to save his life and had to rely strictly on his cutter and fastball and unfortunately got punished for it.
Well, and as we had that conversation, the Tides took the lead over Charlotte. It is currently 8-7 in the bottom of the eighth. How that turns out, you will know. There's some dramatic irony here for the listeners of this show, because we're going to wrap up our discussion now on the Orioles and the Tides. But in part two later this week, we're going to dive into the break camp rosters for the Bowie Bay Sox, Aberdeen Ironbirds, and Delmarva Sewerbirds. You're not going to want to miss that. In the meantime, you can check us out on our many social media channels, including Facebook, Instagram, Threads, X, TikTok, and YouTube. You also are going to want to head over to Substack, OrielsOnTheVerge.substack.com. And if you become a subscriber, you can have access to my breakdown of the break camp rosters for the Sewerbirds, Ironbirds, and Bay Sox. We're going to break that down a little bit more in our next episode. For Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens, this is Zach Sveden. You've been listening to Orioles on the Verge, part of the Believe Podcast Network.